The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Over the Monster podcast. As is the case every week, it is me, your host, Matt Collins, and I am joined, as always, by Brian Joyner. And usually this is the time when I say things are going well for the Red Sox, and they've only lost once, or they haven't lost at all since the last time we spoke. That is not the case this week. This is probably the lowest point we've seen for the Red Sox. This season, they had a miserable trade deadline, which we're going to spend most of the show talking about. They also got swept by the Rays, which I'm sure will also come up plenty. But Brian, I think you're strangely excited to talk about all of the bad things happening with the Red Sox right now.
Oh, man, misery is my milieu. I am thrilled to be able to talk about this. How do you talk about things when everything is just great and working out? Hard, you know,
we've been agreeing.
It's like, ah, this is great. What do we have to talk about? Now we got some meat. We got meat and potatoes that we can go over.
Yeah, I still don't know how much we'll disagree, but we definitely have some new things to talk about. And like I said, most of the show is going to be trade deadline stuff. And I figure the easiest way to just jump in is to just go through the individual trades first. The Red Sox made 3 deals before the deadline. Let's talk about those, and then we can look more big picture at what they did, what they didn't do, all of that good stuff. But we'll start where the Red Sox started, and that is with their biggest trade of the deadline. Came in Thursday night. They traded right-handed pitching prospect Aldo Ramirez for Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber, who was just destroying baseballs for the month of June before getting hurt. He is still on the injured list, but he should be back hopefully within the next couple of weeks. So just in a vacuum, Schwarber for Ramirez. Did you like this deal?
Sure. Yeah, what's not to like? I thought at the time it was pretty indicative of the way the Red Sox would go about the deadline, which turned out to be right, which was looking for the lowest price deals and scraping, looking to spend as little as possible and get back whatever they could for it. And they sort of just swooped into the Nationals after the Max Scherzer deal, which was a little bit bigger. Just a tiny bit. And I mean, I frankly don't see any downside to the deal in a vacuum, because if you start to, and we will get to this, start to gauge it against what I might have preferred they'd do, or what maybe they quote unquote should have done, it doesn't look as great. But by itself, I think it's, you know, pretty much exactly in line, maybe not exactly in line, maybe Schwarber could be an actual first baseman and not just a wannabe first baseman, or we want him to be.
Yeah, we want.
But it seems to be, you know, it makes sense for a team that's contending to get a bat like Schwarber's for cheap. I assume you agree with that.
Mostly. I don't know. I think I disagree with it being super cheap. I don't think they overpaid. I don't think they paid too much. I'm certainly not going to criticize the Red Sox for giving up Aldo Ramirez. I did like Aldo Ramirez, but Schwarber, like you said, I mean, he checks a lot of boxes. I mean, the dude can mash. He can destroy right-handed pitching. I thought at the time of the deal, I was pretty, I don't know if excited is the right word, but I was happy with it. I thought it was a good start to what they needed to do. The problem, as we'll get to, was the follow-up. They didn't really follow it up, and I think that kind of leaves them in a tough position roster-wise. But just, I mean, just in a vacuum, Schwarber, he is going to strike out a lot. I think that was probably the only part of it that I found weird, just because one of the things that Alex Cora said about this lineup pretty much all season is that they need to do a better job of making contact, especially with runners on base. So I was a little surprised that their addition to the lineup was somebody who strikes out about 30% of the time. That said, he's still a great hitter despite striking out that much. I mean, he already has 25 home runs this season in 72 games. That's not going to be a pace that we're going to see when he comes back, but he can hit the ball out of the ballpark. He can draw a ton of walks. He hits for, I mean, a decent average considering how much he strikes out in today's game. So, I mean, yeah, in a vacuum, I think it was all set, but I think the next part of it is when you look at it against this Red Sox roster, and especially with no other moves being made for the position player side of things, the fit is a little strange. It's a little unclear. What do you think his role is going to be? Where do you see him fitting into this roster and getting his playing time?
I don't know. I mean, maybe first base. Maybe. I mean, that was, we wanted them to get someone to play first base. They got someone. Will he play first base? I don't know. But if not, he's got to rotate through the outfield. I mean, those are the only options, right?
Or, I mean, theoretically, I guess DH and you put Martinez in the outfield, but that's sort of the same thing in a way.
Well, now that Kevin Plavecki's our DH and JD's playing true. The outfield. That's
yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. There's a lot going on. I almost think that they don't know yet. I feel it seems like they got the bat that they know is going to help, and now it's just they're going to see where he plays. I definitely think that first base is going to happen. When the trade first went down, my assumption was that the plan was just first base, and he was just going to be a better hitting Franchy Cordero, as in just like a big corner outfielder moving over to first base. But with the way Jaron Duran is swinging, I think there's a chance if Duran keeps struggling the way that he is, by the time Schwarber comes back, if he hasn't turned around, it wouldn't be all that surprising to me if Duran went down and it was Schwarber getting the bulk of his time in the outfield. I definitely think you'll see some first base time, but the more I think about it, the less I think it's going to be almost all first base, and I think he's just going to be moving around. I also think against lefties, he's probably going to sit, maybe not all the time, but a decent amount of the time, and then be the bat to come off the bench, sort of like Mitch Moreland was for some of his time here, which again, I think in a vacuum that makes sense. That's the kind of player that you really need in a playoff run, and they can sort of play an outsized role with like a Moreland or like a Steve Pierce, but when it's not combined with anything else, I think it is a little bit tricky, and it gives more runway, I guess, for Bobby Dalbec to just keep getting playing time. And that seems like the biggest disaster out of the lack of moves on the position player side to me.
I mean, I think I agree with you on the Duran thing, though. I mean, that makes sense, because one way to solve, if we acknowledge that there's a Bobby Dalbec issue and just sort of quantify it, another way to fix the same quantity of problem is to remove the Jaron Duran problem and mitigate the Dalbec problem by having Schwarber platoon with him. So it does, I mean, it seems to me like the cost They wanted a bat, and the cost was the major dictating factor of what bat they got, and not the fit. And I mean, I think that's pretty clear. If it was the fit, it would have been like Carlos Santana, who mentioned the strikeouts. Less of an issue there. So
there was a report, who knows how real this report was, but there was a report that the Red Sox were pushing for Santana. The Royals didn't want to deal him. I can kind of see the Royals doing that because they do sort of buck the trend in terms of bad teams where they're willing to hold on to some good players to be just regular bad instead of super bad. So I can kind of see that, but there were other options even beyond Santana that didn't make sense.
Yes. Though, and I mean, obviously Anthony Rizzo is going to come up in this conversation, but
I mean, we can bring that up right now if you want.
Well, I'm not surprised the Red Sox didn't get Rizzo. And part of the reason is, you know, the Yankees made some big moves, but the Yankees have to make some big moves. I'm not saying that excuses the Red Sox, but I do think that certainly the Blue Jays went huge. And that's also, as much as I think you and I look at it and a lot of people look at it and say, hey, if you're at the top of the division, the Dodgers, I mean, they're not at the top of the division, but what do they have, the second best record in baseball?
I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. They're like assured that, basically.
No, Matt, they're going to win the World Series. They're going to win the World Series. They're going to win the World Series every year for like the next 5 years. Anyhow, we look at it, and I don't think we're wrong to look at it like, if you're at the top, you should put the gas pedal down. But that's Dave Dombrowski baseball. That's not Chaim Bloom baseball. And I think that the AL East moves represented a window into the way the teams are looking at it, and that the Red Sox already felt like they were competitive enough to win a World Series, and so they were lightly supplementing what they had done, because that's what the long-term economic, I mean, Chaim Bloom said as much, like it took a long-term approach at the deadline. And teams that are facing bigger crises in the short term took a short-term approach. Now, often, those short-term approaches to get better players pay off in the long term, because winning is its own reward, and then people stay, and yada, yada, yada.
That's the part of it that typically seems to be missed, is that winning helps the long term. But, yeah,
if I were a Blue Jays fan, I'd be just ecstatic. I mean, the team is back. I know that they're way back, but the team is back. They got Barrios. Yeah, they gave up two big prospects, but they're still prospects. And for the Blue Jays, I mean, they just must be
happy. And they got Barrios for next year, too. It's not like they...
Right, exactly. That wasn't a rental. Well, that's the other part. Yes, they also get him for next year. They're happy. We're not so happy right now, I don't think.
I think that was the difference between, all these teams' approaches. The Blue Jays, they're certainly not punting on this year. Obviously, they are still enough in it that they are making a push, but I think that was as much about next year, too, because obviously their core is right there. And then for the Yankees, they're in a desperate position. They just are. They haven't won in a long time. Their fans are getting restless. They really needed some sort of wake-up call. So that, I think you were right in that they had to go in a way that the Red Sox should have gone in, but they didn't necessarily have to. The Yankees had to.
I've talked about it a bunch, but this morning dropping my daughter off at camp, I heard the sad Aaron Boone clips on the radio this morning. Oh, it was so great. It was so great talking about how I think Luis Rojas no-hit them for 5 innings last night. And he's just doing his sad sack routine. Oh, it's beautiful.
The only thing I saw from the Yankees game last night, or Monday night, I should say, I guess, was the cat on the field. And I did get a kick of the the cat being on the field. That was fun.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like a cat on the field?
Exactly. So are you satisfied once Kyle Schwarber is in the lineup and inserted, however you are? Do you think they did enough offensively?
Well, they certainly offended a lot of people. I mean, no, I don't know if they did. Schwarber's great, and I mean, it's like he's like an emissary from the 2004 team that's come to be on this one. It'll be really neat to have him in there. Yeah, but. Are they better? Yes. Are they enough better? I think the consensus is probably not, but we'll see.
Well, I think
you're talking about offense.
I'm only talking about the lineup. Yeah, specifically the lineup. I think it's closer, at least. I think you can still make an argument, and I probably would agree that they didn't do enough offensively. But I think, for me at least, and I think the consensus is that the ire is more towards the lack of pitching help. But I will say, they didn't even, like, with Schwarber, all I really wanted them to do was... But
the offense is the defense, too. So, you know, you have to count the field.
I guess I should say position players rather than offense. But what I was going to say, I didn't even need them to make some major splash in addition to Schwarber for the lineup or for the position players. I mean, I just wanted, like, a CJ Krohn or, like, some right-handed bat who can play first base in case Schwarber just absolutely cannot, and who can be a better platoon partner than Bobby Dalbec. I mean, the Steve Pierce comp was just too easy, but if they could find another Steve Pierce, and not necessarily a guy who wins World Series MVP, but a guy who can just be a platoon bat and play first base, that was really all I felt like they needed for the offense, and it really shouldn't have been that difficult to find. But they didn't get it. So, I mean, I think I'm not incredibly worried about the offense. I still think really it all comes down to how Bogarts, Devers, and Martinez are hitting. Everybody's kind of in a slump right now, which makes everything feel worse. But if those guys are hitting plus Schwarber, the offense can probably get by, but it still feels like they were one, again, not major move, but they were one minor move away from really having a lineup that I could feel good about, and now I just feel okay about it, I guess.
Well, we've talked about it. It's about contingencies, you know, because the playoffs are not a big sample. You want to have the right guys for the right situations in the playoffs. And I totally agree with you. I am not convinced. Did they improve their positional player field? Yes. Did they cover all their bases? I do not think they did.
They're putting a lot of pressure on, I guess, one of Duran, Dalbec. I guess you could throw Franchi in that mix of being good down the stretch. And that's far from a sure thing. It could happen. They all have the talent, but I don't know. It's hard to feel great about them kind of needing that. But I mean, like I said, they have a lot of guys struggling right now. Alex Verdugo looks totally lost. Hunter Renfroe hasn't really looked the same lately. Christian Vasquez has been sort of quietly disappointing this year. I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around offensively. You had brought up Rizzo specifically for this team. Would you have preferred Rizzo over Schwarber?
I mean, narratively, of course, but, and I think, for the cost, Schwarber is fine. And I stress, I think that all of this was dictated by the costs. I don't even know how relevant it is. I more learned, I think, about what the Red Sox are going to be like than I am comfortable to sit back and say, oh, they should have gotten X, Y, or Z, because that's just not a thing they're going to do.
Well, I don't know how long that'll last, but
well,
there's an ownership group that has a history of overreacting in both directions pretty wildly.
But
if they fall out of this race and like miss the playoffs or something crazy, I think they're going to go bananas this offseason. And probably
I disagree. I don't totally disagree.
It's just this ownership's MO is they cannot pick a lane.
They do pick a lane and they stick with it for like 4-5
years.
Yeah,
maybe it's too soon.
They're in the economizing lane. Like, I don't blame Chaim Bloom for being Chaim Bloom. This is what they wanted when they got him. It'd be no different than like signing Steph Curry. He's going to shoot threes. You know, he's not going to do a different thing. This is what Chaim Bloom was going to do. And the only thing that will enrage me is if later he's like, oh, yeah, we should have made more moves at the time. No. This is who he is. This is what they want to do, and this is what they're going to do. And our mutual friend Brady has been more upset than usual. justifiably, I think, saying that the team had been overperforming a little bit, especially when you look at run differential. And it's all the fact that the trade deadline happened at the same time they went into this four-game funk against the worst possible team to do it against. It's going to invite all of this. I don't think Chaim Bloom cares too much because he's very much the big picture, longer. I mean, that's his thing. But it's going to be interesting if a team that, I mean, the Red Sox made some playoff runs, but with the exception of the ALCS they lost to the Rays, they typically were really good at winning it all or just sort of like fizzling out. And we might be headed for a little in-between where they go a decent way and run up against better teams, not unlike the Rays, who were very good last year, did against a team like the Dodgers, who do right now what the Red Sox did 20 years ago. Oh my God, 20 years ago. But do what I think I can speak for you and I have generally said is a good approach when you're good, and that is to just get as good as you possibly can get and worry about it later. Yes, the playoffs are capricious, so the Red Sox could still, you know, nothing is, oh, it's August 3rd when we're recording this. But I don't have a great feeling about the rest of the year. And I think it's justified. I know it's only been a few days, but the pitching is also, it's not inspiring at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, nothing is really inspiring at the moment. And I think the offense is kind of getting let off the hook a little bit just because the pitching has been so bad, especially the starting pitching lately. But, I mean, the offense has been just so bad with runners on base, which feels fluky, but while you're watching it, it doesn't. I think I pretty much agree with everything you said there, and I don't know, I'll have a few more words on that a little bit later. But I did just want to finish up Kyle Schwarber.
At least they have the best player on the USA Olympic team. That's nice.
That is a good thing. Tristan Casas is who we're referring to, if you did not catch that one. Just real quick, Dr. Gentleman Fox on Twitter asked a realistic time frame for Kyle Schwarber. As far as I know, they're still expecting, I don't know, around the same time as Chris Sale, which is in the next 10 days to 2 weeks or so. So that's kind of what I'm expecting for Schwarber. Until they say otherwise. So the other two deals the Red Sox made were both for middling relievers, middle relievers. They traded Alex Scherft for Hansel Robles with the Twins, and then they made a deal with the Pirates. Old friend Ben Cherington running the Pirates these days. He traded for his former first-round pick, Michael Chavis. Red Sox got Austin Davis. Any thoughts on those two deals specifically, either together or as separate entities?
Well, Chavis belongs in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. I'll say that. He seems tailor-made for that team, and that's not a compliment.
I don't know. Oh, I mean, I guess player-wise. Personality-wise, I kind of feel bad. He deserves a bigger market because he's a cool guy. But
yeah, sure. So was Andrew McCutchen, though, and that didn't matter.
That's true.
As I said last week, these are the Wheel of Fortune letter deals that they give you. These deals were just... I don't have much to add about these deals except for they seem pro forma. They were just, and this goes again, and these were very, very, very late breaking deals that fit what I think is the Chaim Bloom approach of getting whatever's left for pennies on the dollar, or, you know, 80 cents on the dollar, rather than aiming higher and spending more. I don't have many thoughts. Do you have thoughts?
I mean, I think it sucks. Robles has been interesting to me for a few years, and maybe they can kind of get something out of him. I think he has the potential to be a solid reliever, but he just hasn't been for a couple years, and he's too inconsistent to really feel great about it, even if I see the potential. And I've kind of been getting into Alex Scherf a little bit. These last couple months, he's former starter, just started relieving this year, and he's been pretty good, so I could see him being a major league guy at some point pretty near into the future. I truly do not understand the Austin Davis for Michael Chavis deal, and I don't really feel great about Michael Chavis, but I don't understand the point of the deal. I don't know what they see in Austin Davis. I don't understand what he adds to the bullpen that they couldn't just get from somebody that they already had, like a Caleb Ord or whoever it might be. I guess they just really wanted another lefty, but he's just never really been good, and he's not that young. I don't really see the upside. I guess he misses a decent amount of bats, but that deal just kind of confused me more than anything. But I mean, just more generally, they didn't do enough in the bullpen, just to put it as frankly as possible. They needed to get somebody who I think they could feel good about adding to their core group. And I don't think Robles is there. Like I said, I think he has the potential to be that guy. And I wouldn't be like totally shocked if by the time we get to late September, he is in that group. But I felt like they needed to get somebody who very clearly was in that group right away. Craig Kimbrough was obviously at the top of the board, but I mean, there were other guys that were traded that could have fit that mold, and they just weren't willing to pay the price for it. And this is where I'm most disappointed is what they did with the bullpen, which was essentially nothing.
I mean, the White Sox did pay a bunch for Craig Kimbrough, and good for them, frankly.
It was a lot. It didn't have to be Craig Kimbrough, though. I mean, there were other guys.
Right. I agree with you on the Austin Davis thing. It seems to me, you know, I was talking about contingencies. It's like he went with the Austin Davis deal, maybe. I mean, Chavis's skill set is duplicated several times over by that sort of pool of Red Sox players they have.
I would have rather have traded. So when that trade first came through, I first saw the Chavis part, and I kind of assumed that they were just trading him to get him off the 40-man. I think I would have preferred them to just trade Chavis for, like, an 18-year-old prospect in, like, the Dominican Summer League, and then not have to DFA Marcus Wilson, and that would be the way to clear the 40-man. I just don't understand why they needed to bring in Austin Davis. It just, I don't know. That felt like a mismanagement of the whole, and with Marcus Wilson, that whole like string of transactions just felt like mismanaging the roster to me. And that is, as much as you were saying earlier that some of it's not on Heim Bloom, and I agree with you. This is kind of who he is. I do feel like he kind of biffed the bottom of the 40 man here.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think that this is preparing. Look, we're talking about contingencies, and I would say that needing a Steve Pierce type or the use of a Steve Pierce type in the playoffs is a lot more likely than needing this one extra lefty reliever in case you need to face a lefty batter who also can't be that good because Austin Davis isn't that good.
And when you also have Josh Taylor and Darwinson Hernandez, Darwinson Hernandez is hurt right now. Hopefully he'll be back by the playoffs. But it's not like they don't have any left-handed relievers. Two of their core relievers are lefties. It is bizarre. Or they could have, the other option coming back to Marcus Wilson, because this one, the Marcus Wilson thing really kind of bothered me. I don't understand why they didn't add him into a Michael Chavis package. They could have gotten something better than Austin Davis rather than, it was just weird. Like I said, the Austin Davis just really confused me. I was so, when I Googled him to look at his numbers after the trade and I opened his baseball reference page, for a solid 3 minutes, I had assumed that I was looking at the wrong Austin Davis because it just made no sense to me. I was totally perplexed.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. Well, it put us over. Those two deals put us over the 1.5 we said we'd be over. So at least we got that going for us.
Well, there we go. Do you think Shaves is going to put it together in Pittsburgh? You can use whatever definition of put it together, I guess, you would want.
No, I think he's a quad A player, which is why I said I think he belongs in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I've always been a believer, but he just looks so bad. I definitely don't think it would have ever happened to Boston. I don't think the opportunities would be there. I could see him being like a starter on a bad team. I could see him kind of carving out a starting role and hitting like seventh for the Pirates for the next 3 years or something before he hits arbitration and then kind of floating around. But that feels like the best case scenario.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so we look forward at this bullpen. So I wrote on our little note sheet here what the pecking order is. I guess we can go with that, or the more I think about it more specifically, do you have faith in Adam Ottavino moving forward down the stretch run with no, unless you believe in Robles, I guess he doesn't really have that kind of life support that we were talking about last week with a guy that you can kind of throw and keep him fresh. I guess I'm not really asking a question right now. Do they have enough, assuming everybody stays healthy in the back of their bullpen? Are you concerned about the talent or are you just concerned about the depth? I don't know if this question makes any sense.
I don't know if it does either. I think that Sale's return and the bumping of a starter to the bullpen will clarify what they are working with back there. I think they have, this is very easy to say, if the guys pitch well, they got enough guys. And if they don't, they don't. And they have some, I don't know, to answer the question you kind of asked, I don't think, when you say count on Ottavino, I don't know if they can count on him to win in the biggest spots, but they don't have a choice. They are counting on him. So,
well, their choice would be somebody else, I guess. But I don't know. Yeah. The same questions can be asked of anybody else. To me, the key might be just I don't know if I see them doing this, but the best answer to me might just be push Garrett Whitlock more than you were planning on. Because they've been very cautious with how they used him all year, and for good reason. For all the reasons we've talked about, this is Tommy John, and he didn't really pitch last year, and all of that. But I mean, if Ottavino keeps struggling like he is, and I think you really got to lean on Whitlock even more, and that could have, that could end up having some bad consequences for the future. So they're in a tough spot that they could have solved by just getting a better reliever, but they didn't.
But I wouldn't put it past them to do that, because as much as Bloom says he's looking long term, I think he, and first of all, I mean, Bloom is not the manager; he's the general manager. But
well, they work.
He's talking about
tandem.
Right, but my point is that I don't know. Yeah, they want Garrett Whitlock to have a long and healthy career and win 8 Cy Young Awards and World Series MVPs, sure. But it's the cost of players that he's worried about. And he has Garrett Whitlock, and he got him for nothing. So I wouldn't be surprised if they leaned on him more than was wise in a vacuum, because I think that they look at the entirety of this season's deals as giving them the pool of players they have. And clearly they looked at the trade deadline as just doing the slightest rounding of their work there, and not, clearly thinks that the bullpen work was almost done, because if you're adding Austin Davis, you can't really think that there was a lot left to do. My whole thing has just been, he's going to live, like, everyone's just going to live with what happens. We're going to see what happens when you take this approach, and there's nothing you can do about it.
There is nothing. I can complain about it on the internet. Well,
yes, but we're going to do that anyway.
Yes, yeah, that is true. I am really curious how Tanner Houck plays into all this, because, I mean, we kind of talked about it last week. He could be the guy instead of Whitlock, I guess, but given the way that the rotation looks right now, and with basically everybody trending in the wrong direction, I've said that I don't really love Houck as a starter, but I don't love any of these other guys as a starter either right now, and I kind of don't know that you can afford to put Houck in that relief role, and I wonder how much that played into their decision. So, I mean, they have options, but it seems like you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, to use an old expression. I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like there's any easy answers, except for, like you said, the pitchers have to pitch well, which seems like it's asking for a lot, but who knows.
And in fairness, it's 4 games in a row they lost. That's not great. But
the timing of those 4 games was, it could not have been worse, with the deadline being followed by that sweep. It just could not have been worse. Yeah.
Well, that's, I wrote the Lionel's post on Sunday. It's like, it really just came down to the Sunday game. Because if they had won on Sunday, they'd be back in first place, and everyone would just wipe it all away and just be like, okay, you know what?
I don't know if it would have been wiped away, but it would have been, the reaction, the feeling around the team would have been much, much different. Plus having a day off on Monday.
Exactly.
Where you just got to stew in it for a little more. It did not work out well.
And like next week we could come back and be like, hey, everything's great again. But
I also
kind of, and this is what I was saying that Brady was saying, is the other shoe with these starters has always been kind of ready to drop, which is the whole reason they got them for the prices and deals they got them to begin with.
I guess I didn't agree with this, and it's turning out that I was wrong. But to me, the other shoe dropping always meant injuries. I was always fairly confident, not super confident, but decently confident in the talent on the staff. It was really the health, but I mean, the talent just hasn't been there. So like I said, I kind of whiffed on that assessment. At least that's what it looks like right now.
I'm not going to argue with you on that one.
We'll talk about that in a second, but you had been talking about the cost in terms of the prospects they'd be giving up. But I think it was pretty clear that the cost in terms of the finances was part of the equation too, because the Red Sox just barely, as far as I've seen at least, are staying under that luxury tax threshold. Hard to imagine that wasn't intentional. I don't really have a question. I just, it really, the way we talk about the luxury tax really pisses me off, especially this year, and some of the writing I've seen about it explaining all of the long-term ramifications for going over the luxury tax without mentioning that the CBA is expiring this year and everything is probably going to change at least a little bit, so we really don't know what the long-term ramifications, all that. Like I said, I don't really have a question. I don't want to spend an hour ranting about this, but it, I just wanted to mention that that presumably came from ownership, and it sucks.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm saying, that while the ownership has whipsawed between extremes, it tends to do so in 5 to 7 year increments, and we are still,
I mean, we're in what,
the
two
at the, and yeah, in the front of the, well, this is how we're going to do things. We're going to stay under, and the deals will be restricted de facto by that. And yeah, I totally agree with you, especially with regard to the CBA stuff. And if I may quickly mention the Patriots, people were the opposite, total opposite situation with the Patriots, where people were getting on them for spending all this money. And there's all these contracts cost too much money, and they are a little bit overpriced for this year. But the NFL's cap is going to go way up next year, and they have these guys signed for multiple years, and next year the contracts aren't going to, they're just going to look normal. If anything, they might look cheap. I just find that people have a very myopic view of these things, and they see what they want to see. That probably includes us, but I want to say,
I think we might fit there too, but I don't sure. know. We're right. We're correct.
Right, exactly. So screw them.
So I guess we should, I'm kind of bouncing back and forth here a little bit, but we probably should spend a little more time on this rotation where the Red Sox also didn't do a single thing. We had talked about the rotation last week and whether or not they need to make a move, and I think we both felt like they could, but it wasn't necessarily what they needed to do. They didn't do what we thought they needed to do. But since we've talked also, the rotation's only continued to go downhill. Are you more worried, even just compared to last week, about their inactivity in the rotation?
Yeah, because they now, not only are the, I mean, I'm really talking about Perez, Richards, and who's the other guy? Pivetta. Really talking about those three guys. I've never had much confidence that they were going to be under four ERA guys for the season. And they are starting to reward my confidence in that. But on top of that, they now have to face Joey Gallo, Anthony Rizzo, and Nelson Cruz. And it's not...
And everybody in the Blue Jays lineup.
And right, they already have to face everyone in the Blue Jays lineup. And now they have... And yeah, it's three guys, but Gallo and Cruz are just incredible. And like Rizzo is still...
Still Anthony Rizzo.
He's still Anthony Rizzo. So when it gets down to the... sort of beginning of the season view of it, when you're looking at the AL East as a four-way dogfight and the Sox and Rays have sort of pulled away, there might be some clawing back of, I mean, the whole reason the Yankees did what they did was to claw back. And if they're going to claw back, they got to do it from someone. And having Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo is going to help you against subpar starting pitching. And the Red Sox have benefited from the Yankees being stank and in the during a lot of the year and having a lot of injuries. But that's not the case anymore. And it does concern me.
Yeah, I think... For me,
regular regression concerned me, and then they took three very, very good hits. And yeah, it's only three guys, but it's three guys against teams they play a lot and games that are going to mean a lot against pitchers those three guys are just not as good as those hitters are good at hitting. It's just relatively speaking.
That shouldn't be controversial. To me, my biggest reason for buying into this rotation, I guess if that's what we're going to call it, what I was doing, it came down a lot to me being confident in Eduardo Rodriguez, and I talked about that last week, and it was only one start, but his last start really put some fear in me that he might actually just not turn this around. And I really think the rotation, he is the swing in this rotation. I think Evaldi is going to be Evaldi. He's not going to be an ace, but he's going to be fine. Hopefully Chris Sale is going to be Chris Sale. I guess we don't know that, but until we see otherwise, I think I'm probably just penciling that in. They really kind of, if they have Rodriguez looking like a solid number two, this rotation looks totally different. But if he's with the Perez, Pivetta, and Richards of the world, and he's barely a guy that you want starting a playoff game, probably a guy you don't want starting a playoff game right now, it really makes this whole rotation so much worse. So I think, for me, that's where I'm differing from last week, is really with Eduardo Rodriguez. And he makes a start on, I guess, tonight when you're listening to this. So this is it's not the biggest start of the season because it's a game against the Tigers, but this is, for my feeling about the rotation, this feels like the biggest start of the season. They just need him to turn around.
He's got to be a number two, not a number two.
He's being the wrong kind of number two. One last thing about, I guess, this was sort of my takeaway from the deadline, and I'm probably going to write something about this for today when you're listening to this, because it's been on my mind for the last few days. But the Red Sox are putting a lot of pressure on a lot of things that are on shaky foundation, I guess, is how you could put it. I mean, they sort of need Kyle Schwarber to be able to play first base and stay hitting at the same time. They need Jaron Duran to learn how to hit major league pitching when it's extremely clear from a lot of these top prospects that it is not easy right now, jumping from the minors to the majors. They need Chris Sale to come back, like I said, and be Chris Sale coming off Tommy John and having not pitched for a couple of years. They may need Garrett Whitlock to pitch way more than anyone would have expected in higher stretch situations. I mean, they just have all of these things. They kind of need Ryan Brazier to come back at some point and look like he did a few years ago. None of these things are guaranteed, and the odds are just, I don't know, they're slim. They're slim, I think, that all of those things happen at once. Again, I don't really have a question, but this is sort of my overarching concern, is that they didn't get any certainty in this group.
It's not great. It doesn't feel great.
It's not good. So I guess that's sort of the end of the trade deadline talk, although, I mean, everything around this team right now comes down to what they did and did not do at the trade deadline, what everybody else did and did not do. And we were just talking about the timing of it all and the sweep of the Rays coming right after. Panic is starting to come for the Red Sox fans. Is the panic valid? Is the division slipping away? Are the Rays clearly a step ahead at this point?
I'd say the panic is a natural reaction, but probably an overreaction at this point. Red Sox are still very good, and they've won a lot of games. And that's the thing. Games count in April as much as they count in September. They won those games. You know, they're in this spot. Are the Rays clearly a step ahead? I would say yes, but I don't think that that's not within a couple bounces. You know, this a step in baseball can be, if you know, if Evaldi goes on a nuclear streak or something like that, could balance it out. I don't think all is lost. I think that the Red Sox will probably stay ahead of the Blue Jays and Yankees. And if they don't, it's going to be a long, long rest of the year. But I don't feel good about the division right now. I mean, I don't. I think they can hang, but I don't think that I would favor them over the Rays, especially after what just happened. And you were saying a lot of the prospects have had trouble adjusting, but it seems like Wander Franco has now adjusted, because in the last couple weeks, he's, I believe he had two hits in every game in the Red Sox series and has come around, and hopefully Jaron Duran can follow his lead in that.
Well, that was part of the reason they could have called him up a little bit earlier and given him some time, so they didn't throw him right into this race, but that's too late for that.
Yeah, I don't feel good about the division right now, and I think that even if I were to... I mean, we were saying this last week after the Nelson Cruz trade that we considered the Rays to be, I think, a step ahead, or at least equal, but and it was contingent on what the Red Sox did, and I don't think they did anything to turn that around, except lose three games to the Rays. So now that they're behind them looking up, it doesn't feel great.
No. I mean, I think I agree the panic is probably a little too much, but it was also, I mean, it's also natural. I'm feeling it as well. I'm certainly not looking down upon anybody panicking. It would be strange, I guess, not to. Fangraphs does continue to give the Red Sox better odds. They're still giving them about a 48% chance of winning the division. Baseball Prospectus, very much on the other side, 23%, where the Rays are about 53%. Yeah, I mean, I think the Rays have to be the favorite, but I mean, if Chris Sale comes back and is Chris Sale, I think that's such a huge lift, and not only for his starts, but I think that has the potential to be the sort of intangible thing that can kind of be lift all boats type thing, and get some of the other pitchers on track, maybe just with his presence. That might be just hoping, wishful thinking more than anything else, but that I do think is something of a valid possibility. But that really feels like the big difference maker.
Well, I really do think that the Blue Jays and Yankees are going to present probably bigger problems for a team like the Red Sox, whose starting pitching is a little bit wafflier. Because, you know, they're not giving up. They're going full speed ahead. And that I'm more worried about losing, about facing them. I suspect they will finish ahead of both of them, but their improvements scare me for the Red Sox more than they scare me for the Rays.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a valid point. I mean, they, especially with the Yankees adding the bats, I mean, the Blue Jays already had the bats, but the Yankees adding those extra bats definitely makes it a tougher matchup. You said you were worried about them making a run. Is there one team you're more worried about than the other?
Well, you and I said all year, if the Blue Jays got another starter, they would be terrifying. And they did. So I'm scared. They both scare me. No, they scare me equally. They scare me equally.
I thought you were going to go with the Blue Jays, and I was going to agree. But I was also going to say, I'm scared by not being more scared of the Yankees. Like, I'm scared of the possibility of underestimating the Yankees, because I mean, they do still have a talented roster. When you add in Joey Gallo and you add in Anthony Rizzo, I mean, that makes a difference. I'm still not totally completely sold on their pitching, but I mean, they did add also Andrew Heaney to their rotation. I don't know. I think you're probably right to be equally scared of both. And it's not a good feeling to be scared of teams on both sides of the Red Sox.
Well, Garrett Cole does have COVID, so we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. All right, I had a few more things, but we're going pretty long, so we don't have to. We touched on some of this stuff anyways. I did just want to mention, we talked about it last week, but it is official. Judd Fabian did not sign. He's going back to college. I don't know if you had anything else to say about that, but I just wanted to put that out there in case anybody had missed it.
I want to thank the Mets for letting the Red Sox off.
Yeah, in case you missed that, the Mets did not sign Kumar Rocker, which is, definitely took the some heat off the Red Sox. And Rocker's not even going back to college. He's going just to work out himself. All right, a few listener questions here before we wrap up, starting with Ben Michael asking about Tristan Casas and if there's a possibility of him coming up in September.
You know, I would have said no. But if the first base situation is just a disaster, if Schwarber can't do it, because Schwarber as a power left-handed bat fills a lot of the same offensive profiles as Casas. But if no one can catch the ball, who's the they have Franchi, but
who's also not a first baseman.
Right.
I think he's looked okay, but he's, yeah.
I still don't think it's going to happen, but I would say 10%.
I'd go lower than that. I'd say 1%. Casas hasn't been that great this year. He's been fine. He hasn't been concerning or anything, but we talked a little bit about this way back at the start of the year about the possibility of Casas coming up, and I think we kind of said he needed to really push himself up. And when you combine the jump that we've talked about, the jump right now from AAA to the majors, and Casas has only been at AA and on Team USA, it feels like there's a good possibility that he just wouldn't even be able to hit that well anyways. I'm still very high on Casas moving forward and for the rest of his career, but for this year, I don't see him. Even if they did call him up, I think he would be probably a net negative at the plate, to be honest with you, just because, it's been such a hard jump for everybody.
Go to hell.
I probably will. A great big lark asked, with Sale most likely coming back August 12th, he says, let's say they stick with Houck as a starter and go back to a five-man rotation. What are they going to do with Richards and Perez? Do we really think they're going to be effective out of the bullpen?
Well, I think he answered his own question as to what they're going to do with them. I don't have any idea. I really don't.
I don't know that Perez is going to be taken out of the rotation. I do still think that Houck is going to be sort of a reliever / they'll go with a six-man rotation sometimes. I do think Richards will get taken out of the rotation, especially if he does poorly tonight or last night when you're listening, so you already know what he did. I wouldn't be surprised if he just got cut. I think they would try him out of the bullpen, but it's not even like he's had the stuff, but his command hasn't been there as a starter. His stuff has been garbage, too. He's a guy that earlier in the year I thought his stuff would play up in the bullpen. I no longer think that. So I'm kind of thinking that Richards is just out of the organization by September.
That makes sense. He came out and was like, I can't pitch anymore because they won't let me use my stuff.
He said, and that was a couple months ago, and he's still starting every 5 days for this team, which is not great. All right, last question comes from W.C. Stevenson, who is asking the best writers to follow for Red Sox content that isn't strictly news. Obviously,
isn't it us?
At Over the Monster. Yeah, obviously that's going to be the answer. That feels like cheating. So if we want to say anybody else, I would just say Alex Speer, I think, is probably up there, as well as Jim McCaffrey and Chad Jennings, both of the Athletic, are two of my favorites. But yeah, you kind of teed me up to just say everybody at Over the Monster, and that's it.
We got to say Corey, too. We like Corey.
Yeah, Matthew Corey as well.
Sox Outsiders.
Newsletter and podcast.
If you are annoyed about something that happens in a Red Sox game, Matt is annoyed too. And you will read about it. I mean that as a compliment.
It is the highest compliment. I like reading people that are articulating what I'm annoyed about better than I could. Yeah, so that's going to do it for probably our most upsetting podcast of the season so far.
Hopefully the season, I was going to say, stand. The season so far.
Hopefully that will stand the test of time, but we will see. We hope you listened, or you enjoyed listening to today's podcast. I can't speak anymore. Please subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Brian is at Brian Joyner. Brian with a Y, Joyner with an I. And yeah, you can read all of that aforementioned writing at overthemonster.com. And we'll be back with you next week.